If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on our new home, which is Tuesdays. I am here with my friend, my mentor, my personal hero, Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
I'm doing really well, Kenny. Absolutely fabulous. It's 19:34 on a Tuesday night. Before we did this podcast, fit in a workout, Hulk Hogan style workout with the dumbbells and the barbell. So I'm feeling pumped up and ready for this podcast.
Did you have your WWF Macho Madness weight bench? we're recording in an evening, which is rare for us. Usually it's daytime, but I had a little kind of laptop issue. But because last night, I should mention, I went and saw Cher in concert in Glasgow.
You did tell me that you were going to this concert. And how was she?
She was brilliant. 73 years old. If she ever tours again, which, you know, maybe she will because she's 80, she's great live. But what I found really interesting was that, like, there were so many people who I didn't expect would be at a Cher concert. Like, Jack Jester, the ICW wrestler, was there, and a few wrestling people that I knew were there. And but you know, the show was really good. She did all the hits. It was 90 minutes of just absolute bangers. So it was a great night. So watch that, and then today, and then I decided not to watch Raw live, and then today I watched it and felt quite good about that decision. But
yes,
but we're going to cover everything. But I guess let's start we'll start with talking about the show before we talk about the ratings of it. Last Friday night, we had Friday Night SmackDown, where the build to Crown Jewel continued. And, you know, we had the big talking points were obviously Hogan and Flair out there at the beginning, doing the segment with the SmackDown specific wrestlers that they could. We had the return of the Firefly Funhouse. We had Kane Velasquez and Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio all getting beaten up by Brock Lesnar, and a pretty fun main event. So, I mean, in terms of where we start, Finn, should we start on Shorty G's outfit?
My God. Looks like a children's entertainer from the early 90s, doesn't he?
I mean, but in the worst way. It looks like one of those ones where you go, we always knew he looked a bit dodgy. Do you know what I mean? But like, yeah. They're not helping him. And like, God bless him, he's out there doing media where he's talking about how, you know, Vince is helping him find his character, not, and you're like, oh, come on, it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, he's embracing it, isn't he? That's the whole message of the character, that it's all right to be who you are. So, I mean, there is a good message there, but you can't dress someone up in a way that they look like a total knob. You just can't, can you? So, I mean, if you want to get this act over, and it's a real shame for Chad, Shorty G as he now is, because, I mean, he's such a talent. You know, if he was a little bit taller, they would be pushing him as a star. And to me, Chad Gable is proof positive that there still is, you know, a level of discrimination in WWE in terms of height, because he's a guy that really is such a talent. He can talk, tremendous performing, so smooth in the ring. And look at him, he's out there trying to make this thing work. But how can it? I mean, it's just doomed to failure. I mean, the only way that he'll survive this is because he is really talented, so maybe people will give him another chance when they finally call time on this absolute dud of a gimmick. And I'm hoping that occurs very soon.
The other thing is it's not cool. Do you know what I mean?
Like, it's not.
Because, you know, as an example, and I'm not, you know, there's a lot of problems with AEW, so it's not like I'm trying to say they're perfect. But if you take a guy like Sammy Guevara, for example, who's 23, and about a month ago, before they started, I think we would have been like, well, you know, we wouldn't have had a lot to say about him as a character. But they put him into something where he kind of feels like he's in this, you know, kind of cool faction or whatever. And it's like, he's 22 or something. He's not, he's probably not even ready to have a big featured spot. But WWE have Chad Gable, Olympian, you know, I think he's in his early 30s or something. And, you know, can wrestle rings around most people. And when he was wrestling Baron Corbin, people were getting behind him.
Yes.
But somehow they've decided to do this. And I just go, who's thinking this up and thinking it's a good idea? I don't understand. You know, this is like, I mean, it's not Akeem bad, but it's not far off.
Yeah. I mean, this has obviously got Vince written all over it, hasn't it? I mean, this is just a Vince gimmick. I mean, he finds things like this amusing. And because Chad's short, then he's fair game to be mocked for it. And that's a real shame, because when he's in there with Corbin, who's a really tall guy, I mean, he's got to be 6'5 or 6'6 legit, hasn't he? Because he's really tall.
Yeah, he's massive.
And it didn't matter. I mean, the height difference, the only time you really noticed it was when Corbin was pointing it out on promos. And when they were wrestling, you didn't care. It was irrelevant. In a sense, it almost made the matches more exciting because you knew there was a size difference. But Gable's such a smart worker. He's so good in there that he negated that height difference. At no point in any of their matches was anything unbelievable. It was absolutely credible. So I feel for the guy, and I hope that this experiment ends very soon and they put him in a costume and give him, you know, revert to the Chad Gable name. The only way out of this really is for him to snap and to turn heel and to, you know, just burn this attire and come back with something else. But he's got such a swagger to him as Chad Gable when he plays a heel. You know, he really, you can see that he really believes in himself. And I hope that this gimmick doesn't ruin that self-belief. You know, we've seen that so many times with wrestlers over the years, that they've been given dud gimmicks, you know, dead-end gimmicks, and it's really ruined them. It's really caused them to lose faith in themselves. And I hope that doesn't happen with Gable. I'm sure you echo that, Ken.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I think it was about 6 months ago or 5 months ago that there was like I think it was WrestleVotes had put a thing on Twitter saying that WWE had trademarked Shorty G. And I think, I don't know whether we talked about it in the podcast, but I think we all just laughed that off. Like, no way. They're not going to call him Shorty G. I mean, if you'd showed me a picture of his gear at that point, I'd have laughed you at the house. But here we are. I did think in the opening segment of SmackDown, I thought Hogan did a pretty good job getting over his team.
Yes.
I thought he did. He knew the characters, he knew the people, he was putting them over, he was having some fun, you know, he was impersonating Junkyard Dog, and he, you know, he's bantering with Nakamura, and like, you know, maybe I'm just biased, but I thought Hogan could have brought it in a way that Flair hasn't really been, but I thought that Hogan really, you know, did a good job there. What did you think?
Yeah, and he was making the save for Shorty G by referring to him as G-Man. You know, maybe I'm sure Hogan's looking at it and thinking, oh dear, you know, this is going to be a career killer. You know,
let's come up with Hogan's best pal was Brutus the Barber Beefcake, so he's seen it all.
Exactly, you know, who then went on to be the Booty Man, you know. Pretty much over for Ed after that, wasn't it? So, I mean, yeah, he was referring to him as G-Man. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Hogan really brought it here on the mic. I mean, Flair, it was just another disaster. I mean, total nonsense. It's like he gets so wound up that he just doesn't know what to say. I mean, he's reached the point where he's incapable of forming complete sentences. He mentioned Saudi twice during his promo as well. Don't mention it. Just don't mention Saudi. You know, just don't mention it. And he's like insistent on bringing it up. But I mean, yeah, Hogan did most of the talking here. He was talking about his team. And then all the different characters, apart from Nakamura, they spoke, and they all did a really good job on the mic as well. I think Sami Zayn in particular really enjoyed going back and forth with Hogan. He looked like he was having the time of his life out there, Kenny. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that? I mean, that was a lot of fun. And as you say there, Hogan's doing an impression, Junkyard Dog, and it was a good segment, really enjoyed it, and I thought it did a really good job of setting up the main event as well.
Yeah, and the main event was a really good six-man tag with, you know, Ali, Roman and Shorty G against Nakamura, Cesaro and King Corbin. I thought the main event was fun. You know, Ali being the one to get the win was also good. Ali, you know, needs something.
We should mention that Cesaro was inserted in the match because Zayn claimed that he was injured. So, I mean, Cesaro came out. I mean, he's just, I mean, he's Mr. Dependable. We all know this about Cesaro. I mean, what a shame. He goes into the match, basically does tons of work. And then in the end, he does the job. I mean, it's the story of Cesaro's recent career. I mean, we know who's doing the job in the match at Crown Jewel this week, don't we? It's not going to be Cesaro's opponent. So, I mean, Cesaro will once again go all out to make his opponent look like $1 million, and then he'll end up staring at the ceiling. But, you know, Cesaro seems to me to be somebody who, once his contract comes up, you would think that he's going to move on, surely. You know, I mean, he's too damn good.
But, you know, there is something to be said. Definitely. He's been in that system now for how long? Like 9 years? 8 years? And, maybe he's just happy making the money that he makes, and that's it. I mean, it all depends, I guess, what your kind of work... Like, I'll give you an example. When I was at What Culture, like, at one point, I got offered, like, a full-time job with What Culture. Like, and you know, they offered me, like, a very good, like, salary. And the reason I didn't take it is because I didn't enjoy that job as much as I enjoyed the Inside the Ropes job. So even though it was less money, I, you know, stuck to my guns and kept doing what I was doing. But, you know, if I was someone who could kind of just in some way switch off and just do it, then I would have probably taken the money and done that. So maybe Cesaro just has built himself up to a nice contract. He likes the people he works around, and that's enough for him. But I echo your saying that he definitely is, you know, he's someone who could be doing so much more if he went somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, he's like the world's most talented enhancement performer, isn't he?
Unfortunately, I mean, that kind of crushed my soul there when you called him that. But yes, he is kind of, that is kind of what he is.
That's really the role he's in. And that was underscored on SmackDown last week. One thing I really liked on SmackDown last week, Kenny, Lacey Evans versus Cameron Connors. As I was watching this, I was thinking, why didn't they do this back in the spring? Why didn't they do this when they first brought her up full time? And Cameron Connors was like a local enhancement performer, not as famous as Cesaro, of course. And Evans came out. She said she didn't want to soil her hands on such a nasty thing in reference to Cameron Connors. Then she sort of walked around the ring. The referee started counting her out. The count got to 9. Evans sprinted into the ring, hit the woman's right, pinned Cameron Connors, and left like she owned and ran and owned the place. And I thought this was a really effective use of Lacey Evans. And why the hell didn't they do this with her earlier in the year instead of rushing her into that feud with Becky Lynch? You know, I thought she looked like a star here, you know?
Lacey Evans is one of those rare people who she commits to the gimmick. You know, like she really... Lacey Evans is someone who, yeah, I think that she's definitely got potential, and I like what they're doing with her. We also had... I'm curious, what did you think about the, you know, Daniel Bryan kind of not saying what he's going to do, and is the Yes Movement back, and Sami Zayn's kind of, you know, goading him and all that kind of stuff. What do you think of this slow burn Bryan storyline?
Yeah, I mean, it was Sami Zayn, I thought, had a great night. I mean, he was really good in the segment with Hogan. He was tremendous here as well. I mean, Bryan, I don't think Bryan actually said a word. Did he? Did he say a word? I don't think he said anything.
No, I don't think so.
Because Michael Cole brought him out, wanted to know if the Yes Movement was back. And then Sami Zayn and Nakamura gatecrashed the segment. They tried to form a pact with Bryan, you know, offered handshakes, you know, said they were kindred spirits, you know, they're all about preserving the planet, you know, they probably got rid of the combi boilers, you know, probably don't take aeroplanes anywhere anymore, you know, all these things that we've got to do to save the planet, Kenny. You know, stop flying, get rid of our combi boilers, you know, only food that's from less than 5 miles from where we live. You know, all these things we're going to do. Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan, they're on board with all that. And then Bryan left. So no answer was given. It feels like my dream of this being, you know, all a ruse, and that Bryan is going to come back even more heelish than ever for that feud with Roman Reigns. It feels like that's slipping away. And if it is, I have this question to ask you, Kenny, and the listeners.
Sure.
what the hell does WWE have for Royal Rumble? What does it have for WrestleMania? You know, what are its big matches over the next 6 months if Bryan is turning face again? Because if he's turning face again, he's only going to be mid-card at best. As a heel, he can do a lot more. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a great tragedy if Bryan turns face. Kind of looks like they're heading in that direction. I hope they're not. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they are heading in that direction. I think the problem is they've not built enough, and this is over Raw and SmackDown and for the men and the women, they don't have enough good heels. Because, you know, on SmackDown, you've got Corbin and Nakamura kind of as the main heels on SmackDown at the moment. On Raw, you've got Randy Orton, who's been there 100 years, and Eric Rowan. And then, like, you know, on Raw, yeah, there's Asuka and Kairi Sane, who are the heels, but they're the tag champions. So who's Becky's opponent going to be apart from Charlotte again?
Yeah.
And then on SmackDown, who does... they've got the opposite problem on SmackDown because they've got Bayley, who's in this hot heel character, but not really any babyface for her to go up against because you don't think they're really going to go with Nikki Cross. So...
I mean, she mentioned that this week, didn't she, during the Nikki Cross versus Mandy Rose match. Bayley was on commentary and she was just... She stressed that she'd wrestled all these people and then Nikki Cross pinned Mandy Rose, and that's presumably setting up a Nikki Cross versus Bayley match. But, like, Bayley kind of really just didn't... She did the reverse of hyping it up. She sort of diminished the value of the match by stating that they'd already clashed. And Nikki Cross doesn't feel like somebody that's ever going to be a singles champion there. Well, maybe one day briefly, but not at this time. She's not going to topple Bayley, not after Bayley has just regained the title and had the character shift. So this just feels like something, you know, just to keep Bayley interested, just to give Bayley something to do. This is not like an end game. This is not a peak in her career. This is just something to just keep her occupied, basically. So yeah, we're in a difficult position, really, in terms of talent, I think.
And you made a good point about Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, because where do you go? Because, I mean, you know, Becky and Charlotte, Roman and Brock, the stuff that's already been done to death, you want to move away from that, but then they're not either giving people the chance to be in these headline scenarios, or there's people who, you know, they've just, like, Nakamura is someone who I just can't ever see him in a main event scenario seriously again. If he doesn't care, which seems to be the case from most of the time, and they don't put a lot of effort into him either. So, no. You know, it all feels a bit, it feels a bit lifeless at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, after the draft, we've got all these, brand exclusive rosters, and we press the reset button, we're starting again. And we need like a series of new stories and new feuds that are going to engage us, that are going to excite us. And WWE hasn't really delivered that. I'm not saying it's a total barren wasteland there. There are things going on that are interesting and that I am interested in. But I just think they could be doing a lot more, and they've got to try and find some stars or make some stars for the big WrestleMania season, which is not far away. I don't even know what they've got for Survivor Series. I do worry about that as well. I mean, surely they can't do another Raw versus SmackDown elimination match. Who's going to care about that?
Well, and, you know, kind of off the back of what you're saying as well, I'll ask you a question. Have WWE stuck to the brand split so far?
Well, sort of. I mean, I understand that we've got Crown Jewel on Thursday, and that's a joint show, and the rules have kind of been relaxed slightly, haven't they, for that?
Here's the problem. We are when this SmackDown episode aired, we were 11 days into the draft.
Yeah.
Rey Mysterio was on this show, and he is a Raw superstar. Now, to me, if he was going to be with Kay Velasquez, why in the ever-loving name of fuck could he not have just been drafted to SmackDown initially, and then you could have done some sort of trade? Put Rey over in a month. You know, like, there's been a bit, you know, put it on the backstage show. There's been a big talent trade that's happened. You know, Raw have now gained Rey Mysterio or whatever. You know, you can make it into a story. But instead, they go to the lengths in the opening segment to only show people who are on SmackDown. So the Raw Crown Jewel 5-on-5 people aren't there. But then later in the show, Rey Mysterio just on the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that Dave Meltzer had said that he had spoken to someone in the company about it, and he had asked them, like, maybe a day or two before the show, before the SmackDown, said, you know, Rey's on Raw, but is he going to be on SmackDown? And the person in WWE apparently said, we know it doesn't make any sense, and Rey shouldn't be on SmackDown, but he probably will. So it lasted 11 days before they, on the same show, enforced the rules and then ignored the rules within the space of an hour.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring all that up is not because... Nothing's going to mean anything unless you make it mean something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we went through this, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, right after, or a week ago after the draft, in that the rosters have been amalgamated, they've been blended, so there'd been no exclusivity, so no one could really remember who was assigned to which brand. So the whole idea of the reset and the draft was that performers would then be brand exclusive, and it was inevitably going to take us a while for us to go accustomed to who was on which brand. I mean, you've got to think really hard about who's on which brand, because it's still early days yet. And as you say, Rey Mysterio was there. Obviously, he was there for the big angle with Brock. So in order to promote the Crown Jewel match, they've decided they're going to do this big angle that they did on SmackDown. Now, I mean, I thought it was tremendous. The one backstage in the trainer's room, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, somebody had said it online, I thought it was a great way to put it. They said, Brock Lesnar got the closest to Rey Mysterio being thrown like a lawn dart by Nash on Nitro since then. Like, yeah. Brock did it the closest when he smacked him off the wall.
Yeah. Now, inevitably, for that angle to take place, someone had to cross brand boundaries, didn't they? Because Brock Lesnar is SmackDown, as you say, Rey Mysterio's Raw. But in order for what occurred on SmackDown to happen, they had to be in the same place at the same time. So that was the explanation for why they did it. And obviously they felt like they needed to heat this story up, because people aren't really that enthused about it, because they don't really know who Cain Velasquez is. And I don't know whether they're really that bothered about him. It doesn't matter so much, because the match is taking place in Saudi Arabia, so the reaction will be altogether different to how it would be if the show was taking place in the US or Canada or the UK. So in order to do what they did on SmackDown, someone had to break the rules. You know, it had to be lifted for one night. So there had to be some relaxation of this brand exclusivity that they were supposedly going to adhere to after the last draft. So, yeah, I get what people are saying, but it, still, in order for this to happen, then someone had to break the rules, didn't they?
Or they could have done what I said a minute ago. Just if you know that Rey is with Kane,
yes,
draft him to SmackDown first.
Well, I get that, Kenny. But, they didn't think that far ahead, did they?
They did not. You're right, though. The segment was brilliant. It was absolutely great. But, you know, again, I mean, and you know, you're right about Survivor Series as well. What are they going to do for that? Are they going to try and, you know, in a week and a half, be like, you know, it's champion versus champion? Is that where we're going? Are they going to change it? Who knows?
Well, indeed, who knows? I mean, there's not really going to be... I mean, if Seth Rollins is still champion by the time of Survivor Series, there's not going to be much of an appetite for another Rollins versus Lesnar match, is there?
No.
I mean, we've seen that on... We saw that at WrestleMania and at SummerSlam. So they cannot present that as a, you know, as the headline match for Survivor Series this year, surely. And as for doing the Raw versus SmackDown match, they can do it. But I mean, Raw kicked ass last year at Survivor Series. The only reason I know this is because I did the review of the show in WrestleTalk magazine, and I called it Always Bet on Red. And that is the only reason that I can remember the outcome of the matches at Survivor Series last year, because I used that title. Because those matches and those outcomes meant absolutely nothing in the big picture.
So, well, you know, for me, they'll never top the 2016 Survivor Series is one of the best they've ever done. When they'd just done the brand split and they had Shane and Brian were the GMs for one show, and it was Foley and Stephanie for the other. And it was kind of they made it feel a little bit more sports-like than usual, and the men's 5-on-5 was brilliant, and there was so much good stuff on that show. But then, you know, the following year we had that match where Triple H ended up like pedigreeing and eliminating like Bobby Roode and Nakamura in the 5-on-5, and then like Triple H turned on Kurt Angle or something.
That's right, yeah.
So they had a really good first year with the whole draft Survivor Series idea, but in order for it to mean anything more, it has to either be fresh matches. You know, like if it ended up being like Wyatt and Lesnar, I'd be fascinated by that because it's a match we've never seen. You can't really imagine it. How would Brock Lesnar react to that character?
Yeah.
That's interesting. But if you're not going to present something new like that, then it's not... I don't think... The idea of brand versus brand and champion versus champion should be that it's two people who you've not seen fight and you kind of want to, you know, tune in for the curiosity of what would happen.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen so many non-title matches between champions of Raw and SmackDown this year on TV that it's no longer a novelty. I mean, who really cares? As you say, Wyatt versus Lesnar, I think they're going to save that for next year. That could be one of the big matches at Rumble or possibly WrestleMania. But we'll see about that. We'll see what sort of shape Bray Wyatt is in after Crown Jewel, if, as most expect, he doesn't capture the Universal title from Seth Rollins.
I was actually going to bring this up when we were going to talk about Wyatt. I think one of the things that I've noticed, and if you've noticed people kind of talking about this, is that like when you watch wrestling, when somebody becomes a big star, part of the reason that they're a big star is because they back up what they say in the ring. They win matches. And at Crown Jewel, two of your biggest matches are with two of the most popular stars in recent memory who have not had big wins, Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt. And they're both going to this show presumably to lose. So it just doesn't really make any sense. And it's like, I'm not saying Braun Strowman is Steve Austin because it's not a direct comparison, but you know, Steve Austin wasn't jobbing to Mike Tyson in 1998. Steve Austin was in there mixing it up and made to look equal. Whereas Braun Strowman is going to lose to Tyson Fury. So it kind of feels like a wasted exercise because you've got these two names that people really want to get behind, but you don't kind of have the balls to just, you know... I mean, you said a couple of weeks ago, why does Seth Rollins still need to be Universal Champion? Why?
Yeah, he doesn't need to be. I mean, the character just feels really lackluster, like it's just had all the life sucked out of it. Especially in contrast with The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, which is such a colourful, multidimensional, deep original. I mean, such an ambitious character. And, I didn't think this week's last week on SmackDown, the Firefly Funhouse, after the fire had taken place, I didn't think that Firefly Funhouse was as... I was expecting more from it, will I say. It seemed shorter than normal. Really seemed like they knew where they were going with it or what the point of it was. Maybe they were trying to sort of manage our expectations for this Falls Count Anywhere match at Crown Jewel. I fear that's what they were doing. After that, Bray will move on to something else. Because it's hard for me to believe that he's going to beat Rollins for the title, the more I think about it.
Well, also because he's a SmackDown wrestler now and Universal titles are Raw belt, so...
Exactly, although, as we pointed out with Rey Mysterio going to SmackDown... Already, the rules have been relaxed, so it is conceivable that he could win. I mean, probably he won't. Do you think Seth Rollins might do the heel turn there? Do you think we might have a double turn in that match? That's possible.
It would be great. I mean, I think Wyatt winning the Universal title would be a huge thing, and it would feel like the first star in a long time who they finally just kind of pulled the trigger with and got behind. And the more they don't do it, it's just kind of enforcing the same message. But I mean, ideally, a double turn would be great because Rollins, to me, feels like a heel. You know, whether it's him, you know, him on social media. I mean, the man should not have Twitter, at all, because he just comes across like. Do you you never want to go for a beer with Seth Rollins?
Oh. It's just not an interest. He don't come across as a nice guy. There's no warmth there. There's no sort of depth to his personality. And he just comes across as this sort of company guy. And he's supposed to be the guy who burns it down and this, you know, rebellious champ. And you know, he's coming across as somebody who's like, you know, WWE. Well, I mean, he obviously is Universal Champion, so in a sense, he's got to defend the company. I get that. But there's a way of doing it and retaining the support of a larger audience and trying to encourage people to support you at the same time. I mean, I don't really follow a whole lot of what he says online because I'm just not really that interested in him as a person. I just find him really quite dull as a character. I think he's itching to do something else. I sense a lot of frustration within Seth Rollins when he's doing promos. I think he knows that he's in a tough spot right now and that there needs to be a big shift for him in terms of his character. And I think that heel turn for him can't come soon enough. As he's been opposing Bray Wyatt and there's so many layers to this character, it's very difficult for him to compete with Bray in terms of character. Also, of course, because Bray's still relatively new and Seth Rollins has been playing this character for a few years, that hurts him as well. So I think he's in a tough spot. I think we need that turn. We need it very quickly. But, you know, if that happens, is that then just going to lead to Rollins versus Roman Reigns, which it may well do? And I'm not really that enthralled by the prospect of that match at one of the big shows early next year, but I think that's what we're going to get. Can I just mention one thing before we moved on about Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman?
Sure.
One other thing about this that baffles me is that they're having a wrestling match, right? Now, we believe that Tyson Fury is going to win. What does that say about Braun Strowman, that a guy who's a boxer in his first wrestling match can come in and defeat Braun Strowman? What does that tell us about Braun Strowman, Kenny?
That he's a loser.
Exactly. And I don't doubt for a moment that Fury's going over, and maybe afterwards there'll be a handshake and an endorsement. But still, Fury's the one who's going over, and Strowman once again loses the big one. And as you mentioned about Wyatt, this was what... I mean, he was a guy who was doing really well in 2014, you know, had his moments over the next few years, but eventually people just lost faith in him because, as you say, he never won the big one. Obviously, he did win the title for the Randy Orton feud in 2017, but that's not something that people really have fond memories of because of the WrestleMania match. But Wyatt was a guy who talked a big fight, he talked a big game, but when it came to the big fight, he never or seldom won the big one, and people just lost interest in him. So in order for someone to be viewed as a star, they have to be booked as a star. It's not that difficult a concept to grasp, is it really?
It's not. Well, I wanted to get your take because you're someone who, as soon as I saw this, I was like, I want to see what Finn's got to say. The rating for SmackDown came out. It was on FS1 because of the World Series, I think it was, instead of Fox. And the rating for the FS1 episode was 888,000. Down from, I think it was 2.4 million last week on Fox. And
yes, 2.44 million the previous week.
How good or bad is it? Like, break down that number for us. Is it something that WWE need to worry about? Is it something that Fox need to worry about? What do you think of the number?
Yeah, I mean, you could say, well, that probably caused a ripple in WWE's ocean of smugness, but I think it was probably far worse than that. I think it was more like a tidal wave. I mean, we know it's in fewer... FS1's, that's the cable channel. That's obviously, it's in... Is it in fewer homes than Fox? Presumably it is.
Yes, I think it's in... I'm going to try and get the exact numbers. How many homes is FS1 in?
Because that's about... That's like a third of the viewership of the previous week. I mean, that's but not far off.
I think it's in similar amount of homes to USA Network.
Okay.
I don't think it's quite as popular as USA Network, but I think that it's in. Is it maybe 60 million homes? 70 million homes?
I think that is a lot less than Fox has in the broadcast channel.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Fox
than that. I mean, the real test will be how does it do this Friday? It's back on Fox this week, isn't it?
Yes. So is that, you know, is it an indication that people just don't want to have to look for it? Or is it an indication that people just don't want to watch the show?
Well, Yeah, based on 1 week, you cannot answer that question. I mean, you could spend a long time speculating, but we're really far better off waiting until Friday. And obviously, we've got Crown Jewel on Thursday with the big matches. So I would imagine that, I mean, that's going to be, so everyone's going to do the show, then they're going to have to fly back to the States for SmackDown Live that next night. That's a tough trip, isn't it? That's when you earn your money as a WWE performer.
It is, yeah. So that's what they're doing.
We'll see what they draw on Friday. That's going to be the real test, Kenny. I mean,
I thought they would do over a million. I've got to say, I didn't think they would do. I mean, if they did 2.5 million viewers on Fox, I thought maybe just over a million would be the sort of low end number. But 880,000 is low. But like you say, this week's probably going to be the test of if that's a one off anomaly or if they have to. I mean, it's not going to be that on Fox, but like if it's like, what is there like a number that it would hit on Fox that you think would be worrying?
Well, if they go much lower, I'm sure Eric Bischoff was smiling secretly when he saw that number on FS1. This is what happens when you fire me. when they were on USA, they were usually doing 2.1, 2.2 million. That was about the range they were in, wasn't it?
Earlier this year,
except for it was a special episode. So if they drop much below 2.44 million, then that is a worrying sign for sure. I understand that WWE was shocked by how low the number was on FS1. I mean, they're probably trying to reassure themselves, saying, well, it's an aberration, it's a one-off. Next week, we're going to come back swinging. We'll be on Fox again. All the people who missed us last week because they didn't know where we were or whatever, they'll be chomping at the bit to watch SmackDown on Friday. We've got Crown Jewel with the big matches. So if the number, say they hit 2.6 million, I'm sure there'll be huge sighs of relief in the corridors of WWE. If the number this Friday is lower than 2.44 million, that is a sign that they're going to be probably back where they were on a regular basis earlier this year, which would be 2.1, 2.2 million, which is kind of the level they'll be at. And it doesn't matter they're on broadcast TV because the same number of people that are watching on USA are going to watch them when they're on network TV. So, yeah, I mean, if you look at those numbers where they were on October 4th, 3.89 million, then lost a million by the following week and then lost another 440,000 by week three. We can't really factor in the FS1 number into this ratings decline. Let's just see where they are this Friday. But yeah, I'm sure if that number drops from 2.44 million, Fox is going to be asking some questions. But I mean, as we said in this podcast, Kenny, what does WWE have in its arsenal? What does it have that it can bring in? You know, what's its big story? What's the big push that's coming? I mean, it can bring in The Undertaker, but that's only a 1 week fix. I mean, Hogan and Flair have now appeared on so many TV shows that their ratings influence will be negligible. So, I mean, they need to create some new stars that are going to try and pull in some new fans. I mean, we've been saying this for years, and occasionally they do it, but there needs to be a big push of a lot of different people to try and create the mood that this is a new promotion. We're in a new TV era, and that it's a new promotion with new characters and new stories and the rest of it. That's what they really need to push for. They can't rely on the old-timers anymore because they've overused them. They've used them up and there's no mileage in them anymore. So
I also want to...
I mean, they need to rebuild. And that's not something that's an overnight process. And if Fox is saying, well, we want those ratings up by next week, I'm not sure what the answer is for WWE. What do you think?
I mean, first of all, they've not really done anything different. Right, like they've given you new sets and they've given you pyro and they've given you kind of a makeover, but it's like the problems are all still there, you know. And if they had had, if Bray Wyatt the Fiend had won the title at Hell in a Cell, that would have felt like a big move that they'd made. Like, you know, we're doing something different, we're doing something fresh, and they didn't do that. So it just kind of feels like all the stuff that people didn't like is still there, and it's, you know, it's it feels like it's harder to justify to people why you should be watching Raw and SmackDown, because there's not really that many exciting storylines going on. There's not much to look forward to right now. I think we're again in this phase of let's just get the Saudi Arabia show out of the way, because people are always a bit, you know, no matter how, whether you watch it or not, I don't think anybody looks forward to these Saudi Arabia shows. They're just kind of an exercise that we have to get through.
Yeah.
But I'm just hoping that something comes out of it. Something soon happens. Whether it's they actually do something with Bray Wyatt properly or not, I just hope they do something that clicks and it connects. Yeah. I think if the numbers keep going down, the draft, the brand split won't even be there by Survivor Series.
Yeah,
they'll just
Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they did that back in the spring, didn't they? And the other problem they've got, and I just mentioned this, Kenny, we'll move on, is that for so long they were reliant on NXT, and there'd be somebody in NXT, or we can bring him up, or we can bring her up. But now NXT sort of needs its stars, doesn't it? NXT needs its stars for USA Network numbers. So it can't dip into that reservoir of talent and say, right, we're picking out you, and you to fortify the roster, because NXT needs its stars to try and maintain its numbers or try and prevent its numbers from dropping any further. So that's something else to consider. But I mean, the great frustration with Raw and SmackDown is they've got so much talent that they're not really doing anything with. I mean, there are a few sort of bright, you know, flashes of light or beacons of hope on the horizon. I mean, AOP, a team that they're sort of bringing on slowly. But, you know, there again, who's the top babyface team that they're going to face? Who's the babyface team that we're really behind, that we can't wait to see defeat AOP? Possibly the Street Profits, but Street Profits are kind of in the building stage right now. So it's not all doom and gloom. There are things that are happening, as I'm sure when we talk about Raw in a moment. There are things that are moving forward, but it just feels like we need to see more. I think we need to see more sort of regeneration of WWE, you know, storylines and talent, and really try and get behind characters and with consistent sort of meaningful pushes. They really need to do that. They need to do that immediately. They need to do that this week.
They definitely do. I want to quickly ask you about this, just because it was a topic that a few people had actually tweeted us and said, can we bring up, is the whole Jordan Miles t-shirt issue, where he had been quite vocal on Twitter about the t-shirt and not been happy with it. I think that it would be pretty poor form for the two of us as sort of, like white males to really speak to racism too much, because it's not really something that affects us as anywhere near as much as other ethnicities. But the question I did want to ask you about it was, do you think that Miles is it good that he sort of spoke up and just sort of said everything that he wanted to say, or do you think that he needed to do it in a different way? Because now we're in this weird spot where he's been very vocal on social media about how he feels about everything, and I don't really know how you go forward with him in NXT if he is essentially, you know, calling everybody out and all that kind of stuff, and seems very angry about being there. So I don't really know what he has put a tweet out today saying that, you know, he apologized for being disrespectful, and he had some things to say about Jay Lethal that I'm not going to repeat. But it was all a bit of a weird situation that kind of came out of nowhere, and I'm curious how you thought he handled it, and did he kind of have to handle it that way to get his point across?
Well, as you say, it's not really for us to comment on whether he did it the right way or the wrong way. This was entirely his call. So if he felt that was the right way to address it, then I absolutely respect it. And I think he did do. In order for this to progress, I mean, really, he needs to meet with his superiors, and they need to basically say to him, right, how do we move on from here? How do we atone for this? Because obviously that t-shirt design, if you look at it, it should never have been produced. Absolutely should never have been produced. So I understand his indignation about this. And I think anyone, once it's explained to them, if it's not immediately obvious, would understand it as well. So, I mean, he really needs to decide, does he want to continue to work for this company? And maybe he doesn't. Maybe this is, you know, beyond the pale for him. Maybe he's just like, well, that's it. I don't feel like I can work here anymore, and I need to go somewhere else. And if that's the case, I'm sure WWE would very, you know, quietly and without any fuss give him his contract release.
Yeah, because this isn't one of those ones where this isn't a Luke Harper situation where they can kind of just say, look, no. we're keeping you.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, this has become a firestorm for them. They've handled this. This should never have been produced in the first place. I mean, I've read the comments about it. I'm sure other people can read them. We don't need to go into hear his explanation for what happened. It seems to me, from what he said, that WWE has handled this very badly from start to finish. And at this point, WWE needs to just get a handle on this and just speak to him and say, right, what do we do to ease the tension here? What do we do to try and, atone for this blunder? And if we can't and you want to leave, then that option is there as well, and we would absolutely respect that. So, yeah, I mean, I respect him for doing what he felt he needed to do. And that's, I don't really have anything to add to that. And it's his choice entirely. And if he felt really strongly about this, which obviously he did, then he needed to go about it in the way that he did. That's my opinion on it.
Yeah, that's fair. So the other, we obviously should talk about Raw. We will talk more about some other stuff later on in the week. We'll hopefully try and record an overrun after Crown Jewel, so that it's kind of current. I ordered the old Power Slam issues on eBay.
Oh, fantastic!
The ones I needed to, because I was missing like three issues, so I have to go and collect them tomorrow. And we will be getting back on doing those old issues and getting through them. But let's talk about Raw that took place last night. There was some decent stuff on the show, I thought, and it wasn't a bad watch. It felt a little bit lifeless.
Yeah, it felt like one of those Raws from, would it have been last year, where it just dragged and it just felt like the audience. I mean, we're in St. Louis, Missouri, one of the great wrestling cities, and it just felt like the audience enthusiasm just wasn't there for quite a few matches.
They were buzzing at the start. I mean, when the show started, that St. Louis crowd were up for it, you know, and it felt like they wanted a good show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was some strange booking decisions. I mean, I'm not quite sure why they decided to go back to Drew McIntyre versus Ricochet after the match they'd had the previous week. I mean, there was no way they were going to top that. There's just no way they were going to equal the brilliance of that bout. And they didn't.
I think the idea was supposed to be that because last week, during their match, there was a good rating to go and revisit it again. But it's like, but you can't, I mean, if you revisit it, you've either got to do 50-50 by having Drew lose when you're trying to build him up again.
Yeah.
Or you have Drew beat Ricochet again. I mean, can you explain to me, though? So is Randy Orton supposed to be a heel? Am I right?
Yes, I think so.
Yes. So who in their right mind thinks that in his hometown of St. Louis, Missouri, that when he comes in and hits an incredible RKO out of nowhere, that is going to get him booed?
Well, I imagine the thought process was Randy's going to come in, he's going to spoil this brilliant match that people desperately wanted to see to come to reach a satisfactory conclusion, and that will be motivation for them to boo him. And it didn't hold up at all, did it?
So, no, it did not.
It absolutely did not. And I mean, you're right. They could have gone back to the match at a later date, but with a story behind it, and maybe have them talk about the first match and do that sort of sports type psychology and have a little sit down interview with a pair of them. Oh, you know, Ricochet's this, Drew McIntyre's that. You know, I can't wait to get in the ring with him again. We had this tremendous match with clips from it and fans going mad. And, you know, why not just build it up as a big match, as like a main event performance? Instead, it kind of was just thrown out there. And then they didn't give us a finish. And what they intended to achieve failed because of the city they were in. So that was just, yeah, I can't explain that one at all. Same with Buddy Murphy and R-Truth. I mean, Buddy Murphy had that amazing bout with Roman Reigns earlier this year. And we were like thinking, wow, what a performance that was. I mean, Reigns really did everything he could to make Murphy shine. I mean, it was a tremendous back and forth matchup. And then Murphy was involved in the Brian and Eric Rowan storyline briefly. And then he kind of fell off the map. And they bring him back in this comedy match with R-Truth. And I mean, that was no way to restart Buddy Murphy. I mean, I failed to see what any of that achieved. It's just a comedy match with, you know, the Singh brothers and the Job Squad, they're out running around the ring. You know, R-Truth starts chasing after them because he wants the 24/7 title back. And then he's exhausted. He runs back into the ring and Murphy nails Truth with the knee and pins him. So it didn't even feel like almost like a fluke victory. So I found that bizarre. Last week we were talking about Viking Raiders, who had had the match in which they'd won the Raw Tag Team title, and then they pitted them against Kurt Hawkins and Zack Ryder, who apparently are babyfaces. I believe the Viking Raiders are babyfaces. So they pitted them here against, was it Rizzo and Bryant, Kenny? I believe it was.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Two jobbers in Chicago Cubs gear, who apparently are a heel team. That's baseball, is it, Chicago Cubs? Heel team. In St. Louis, presumably.
Yes, because apparently, yeah. If you're another city's team, they just hate you. So yeah. That seems to be the way it is.
Yeah. So I mean, but these are a couple of jobbers, and you know, not much response to this match. You know, Ivor and Eric, they give them the title. It's like they don't know what the hell to do with them next. I mean, it's like maybe they need to get the Authors of Pain in. You know, for God's sake, give the Viking Raiders a story. They need something. I'd like to see the Authors of Pain running next week and beat down the Viking Raiders. Maybe that can be their next feud. And can I also say, when I went to Norway, Kenny, I learned that Viking helmets did not have horns on them. That's what I learned when I was in Norway.
So why did people put horns on them then?
This is something that has been created to make the helmets more interested. Something like that.
Wow! Don't they say that like Santa Claus used to be green, but then they changed it to red or something? Is that not a thing too? Am I making that up?
Oh, you could well be right. I don't know about that. Santa's still real to me. Damn it!
He's still over. Do you know what I mean?
That's right.
Santa's not being paid to go to fucking Saudi Arabia to job to Tyson Fury.
Yeah. Although in saying that, I'm not sure how the vote went tonight, but apparently we're going to have an election before Christmas. I don't know did that go through?
It has gone through. I think the date is still up for debate, but yes, there is another election happening in the UK because nobody can decide how to get out of Europe. So
exactly. So we need Santa more than ever this year, Kenny. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, he can bring us together and maybe he can get the Viking Raiders some better horns. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that. Do you know, I did when I was watching Raw this week, when Paige came out at the beginning of the show, I thought, this is quite interesting. She brings out the Kabuki Warriors and then, you know, Asuka and Kairi are kind of acting heelish and, you know, they're sort of, you could tell they're not quite happy that Paige is there. Yeah. And then they have Asuka spray the green mist into Paige's face. And I don't know, like, I loved that and I loved the visual of it. But to me, as soon as she sprayed mist in the face, that should have been the Kabuki Warriors going to set up a move on Paige, who we know has a broken neck, and Becky Lynch's music comes out and hit. I do not understand why we had 90 seconds of dead air with Paige having to be like, this really stings, it really hurts, I can't see. Like, to me, I was just like, it lingered far too long. And I think what should have been this really impactful segment with a big, you know, star come to save the day, just kind of felt like we had 90 seconds of dead air that kind of made it a lot less impactful. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it just felt like a massive overreaction by Paige. As you say, Paige she can't take any moves. We all know that. Paige also insists on wearing shoes that she can hardly walk in. She does this all the time. Now, I understand it if she's in there with people who are really tall, but Asuka and Kairi Sane are not really tall, so it would actually be further reason for her to wear flats, not massive heels. So that didn't help either. But yeah, it was a massive overreaction afterwards. Give me some water, it stings, and just made her look really weak, you know, as an ex-wrestler. So yeah, Becky should have been straight out there to set up the, you know, the Lynch versus Kairi Sane match. I mean, at least give WWE credit for one thing. They brought Paige back. She had previously been associated with Kairi and Asuka. So at least they gave us an explanation as to why that business relationship has been terminated. So, I mean, you know, at various points in history, Paige just would not have been seen again, and it might have been mentioned on commentary or probably would have been ignored. So at least there was an angle that affected the breakup. So, although in saying that, at the same time, we know that Asuka and Kairi Sane haven't been full-on heels, but have kind of been acting heelish. So maybe Paige could have acknowledged that before she was sprayed with the mist. So, yeah, bad night all round for Paige, I felt.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of the segment was good. I was kind of baffled as to why the way that it played out just felt a bit off.
Yeah, the timing of everything. Just get Becky Lynch out there, get the match going, get Paige out of there and try and protect her after she's been blasted with the mist. I thought it made Paige look really, really, really weak. And
Did you make of the Becky and Kairi match that followed it?
I thought it lasted too long. I didn't think it really flowed. I thought there was some untidiness there. I think that some people like the match. I was not blown away by it, Kenny. I just feel like Kairi Sane hasn't really found her feet yet on the main roster.
She's a very clear, like, she feels like a babyface, but she's a heel. And I do like her team with Asuka. I mean, I wish to God that somebody would say, do you know what? Let's just let them have Asuka's theme music when they're together.
Oh God, that combination music just drives you nuts.
Well, because Asuka's tune's a bit of a banger, right? It would make you want to get your guitar out and do a wee riff. And then just as you're getting into it,
Kairi's is like all uplifting, like a baby face music, isn't it? So it's just like, it just clashes really badly.
It makes no sense. It's like, I don't know, it's like having an air fan on one side and a heater on the other. Like, it doesn't make any sense to have one or the other. I thought the match was okay. I mean, I think that I think what's kind of holding me back from being fully into it is that Kairi and Asuka are such a good team together that Becky. I mean, I don't feel like I really believe that that Asuka or Kairi are going to have a chance for the belt because they're the tag champions. So it just kind of feels a bit disjointed at the moment. But then who else is Becky Lynch face? And Becky versus Asuka is probably the biggest money match they've got on Raw. So maybe we will get that later on in the year. But I'm curious, do you think the Kabuki Warriors are going to be a long-term thing, or do you think eventually we're going to see a split?
I don't know. I mean, at least they're doing something with them now. We can't really knock this team for being champs and doing the heel turn because... I complained long and loud about them doing nothing as baby faces. So at least they are doing something as heels. It still doesn't feel like the right fix. Kairi Sane is such a natural baby face, as we've said. Doesn't really feel like she's found a groove yet there as a heel. I mean, Asuka to me works as a heel, but Kairi really doesn't. And this mixture of combination music doesn't work at all. I think Kairi really needs to start healing it up. I mean... The problem is, if you watch NXT, Kenny, Io Shirai is so damn amazing in this role as a heel. She is so good on NXT. We need to talk about this next week on the podcast, that she's massively overshadowed Asuka and Kairi Sane. That's another drawback. I mean, I think Io Shirai is just so on board with this heel character and this heel turn. I mean, she's, to me, one of the best damn heels in the whole company.
But you know, that's what Sandra and I have talked about, obviously... the idea that NXT is cleverly having a much better kind of women's division, so they're having a strength that AEW doesn't have on the competing show. But the thing with Io Shirai, she's allowed to be that character.
Yeah,
you know, Triple H and the team there are allowing her to do it. I do think long term though that Asuka turning on Kairi and Asuka being the maniacal heel and Kairi being the kind of valiant babyface, that could be a big match down the line if they build it properly.
I agree. I mean, I hope the team, to answer your question, which I didn't answer once again, I think they will leave the title on them for quite a while because who the hell else is there? I mean, surely... they put Charlotte and Natalya together as a team, but I'm not really buying those two as a team long term. That's almost sort of something just to give them something to do until they work out where they're going to go next with them. But I think Kairi and Asuka, I think they're going to be champs for a while. And I hope Kairi can really find a feet as a heel and really embrace this role, because I don't feel like she really has yet. And you are right, long term, yeah, Asuka turning on Kairi Sane. That is a, you know, a natural match because Sane's, you know, such a natural, perfect. I think she's one of the best babyface performers they've got, or at least she was when she was NXT. I thought she was really good there. So I hope she can bring some of that babyface magic to the main roster when the time is right.
So then we have elsewhere on the show, they had a lot of kind of stuff of, they had people on there who they're trying to get over. But I think the issue is more they're not really doing a lot of character stuff with the people. So like we had the Street Profits on here doing a promo. Yeah. We had the Buddy Murphy match with R-Truth.
We had Andrade versus Sin Cara again, another rematch.
And Sin Cara, who's now got Catalina with him, which is... I don't think I've ever seen like somebody get beaten so much that they then get a manager. Like, he became such a jobber that he got... Like, I mean, it's Catalina must be like, oh, great, you know, what's my role going to be? You're going to be Sin Cara's manager. She's like, what?
You're like, oh my God.
It's a bad day when managing the Lucha House Party would be a step up.
Well, yeah, it would be a step up, wouldn't it? But I mean, you know, Sin Cara, I mean, Andrade had to put his feet on the middle rope in order to beat Cara. Why the hell does Andrade have to use the ropes to beat this jobber? I mean, we went through this last week and I just don't understand it. Andrade is a guy who's gone forwards and backwards so many times this year. He must not know whether he's coming or going. And, you know, this is, again, one of those sort of feuds where it just feels like he's on hold. Oh, he can just do that. This is a stopgap. He can do that until we find something better for him. But in the interim, people lose faith in talent, you know, being stars and having, you know, in having the ability to get over. You know, we're kind of viewing Andrade and he's like, well, this guy's sort of a second match guy. I want to believe that Andrade can be, you know, a second from the top match guy, not second match guy. And that's where he is at the moment. And it's like I was saying earlier, Kenny, they need to just start cranking it up here on a lot of pushes and trying to get some of these people over. And I know you can't do everything at once, because if you do, then it's sort of sensory overload and nothing takes. But I think they need to be doing more than they are. And Andrade is a guy I've mentioned many times before. I'm a huge fan of his. I think somebody who can be a huge star in this company. You know, go back to the match. Remember the match he had with Finn Balor? I think it was just after WrestleMania. He beat Finn Balor on, was it on Raw?
I think it was on Raw, yeah.
And they had this tremendous match. And it just felt like a career maker for Andrade. And then I think what happened was they ended up changing some things around in the draft. And then Andrade ended up on SmackDown. I think this happened like the next week or something. And Balor got his win back. And it's such a muddle. And you're like, all that good work's just been undone. So, with Andrade, it's like, is this guy a star or not, WWE? We need to know.
I mean, the thing about this show is that I don't really want to complain about it too much, because they did feature a lot of people who, you know, to try and get new names over. So I think that should be commended. You know, Humberto Carrillo taking on AJ Styles, like we said with Buddy Murphy, even Seth Rollins taking on Eric Rowan. The issue, I think, is more that, like, I feel like if you're a wrestling fan who, the thing that you love the most about your wrestling is, like, the in-ring stuff, right? I don't think that's what you're going to WWE for. You're going to WWE for, like, a kind of sports entertainment style show. That's what they put on. But what they're doing is they're having all these new guys have good matches, but there's nothing... Like, who is Humberto Carrillo? Apart from a cosplayer, La Parca, or something. You know, like, who is... You know, Eric Rowan, who was doing these promos that were starting to get over, you know, he's in this match with Seth Rollins, but is that really doing anything to get the Eric Rowan character over? It just felt like a lot of wrestling, and it's weird for me to complain about that, but I just want more character stuff and more character development. Give me some vignettes, give me some stuff, because the most exciting thing on this show, and the thing that people popped for the most, was Randy Orton coming in doing an RKO.
I thought you were going to say... the closing segment with
we're about to cover that. Don't you worry.
Well, I mean, we had the Iconics who were back on the show for the first time in I don't know how long, and you know, they lost what was effectively a nothing match to Charlotte and Natalya. Billy Kay tapped out to Natalya's sharpshooter. I mean, the Iconics can never really be anything more than this, so I don't suppose that's any great loss. Seth Rollins was booed in an interview with Charlie. You know, he mentioned that he burned the funhouse down, but then the funhouse came back and just felt like Rollins was rudderless here. Was he a good guy or is he a bad guy? As you say, then Rollins then had this long Falls Count Anywhere match with Eric Rowan. And like, after watching this, I'm not sure if I really need to see another Falls Count Anywhere match this week. You know, we've seen, you know, this was so loaded with gimmicks and stunts that they're going to have to go some to top this in the match at Crown Jewel. But to me, you don't promote, you know, a cage match with a cage match 4 days before the other cage match. Sort of found that odd as well. And as you say about Eric Rowan, it did feel like he was going somewhere on SmackDown in that feud with Daniel Bryan. And what the hell's happened to Luke Harper? You know, I mean, he was like a really effective ally of Eric Rowan's, especially in the match at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view with there was Reigns and Bryan versus Rowan and Harper. And I thought that was a really good match on the pay-per-view. And just feels like, well, Harper's outlived his usefulness, so he can disappear again for 3 months. Maybe we'll bring you back just before your contract expires. Maybe we won't. Maybe we won't bother. But yeah, Rowan, I mean, he was a very competitive match here with Seth Rollins. And Rollins, in the end, had to use a forklift truck to pin Eric Rowan. So in a sense, Eric Rowan was protected on the finish, but I don't really see a bright future for Rowan on Raw. What's he going to do next? Can you imagine what he's going to do next? I mean, I probably just fade into obscurity, I imagine.
Pretty much. I mean, to me, this coming Friday's SmackDown and next Monday's Raw are going to be the real test of where's everything going post-Crown Jewel. And I hope they've got something good for us. The main event segment, though, is, you know, you've been saying for a few weeks in this podcast, you've been saying, I need more Jerry Lawler in my life. You know, you've had a pound for every time you've said it, Finn. And so they gave you what you wanted, the King's Court, or the Divorce Court, as it's called.
Yes.
Headlines Raw, with Rusev and Lana being in the ring for the first time since all the shenanigans took place.
I don't know. I mean,
I don't even know how to. Usually, I can summarize something in like a sentence or two. I don't even know where to start.
What we know from this segment, Kenny, is that Lana is a fashion influencer. Influencer.
That and that Rusev is a sex addict.
He was constantly up for it, just constantly, morning, noon.
I mean,
night.
There is part of you that goes, "It's so bad, it's good." Do you know what I mean? Like. When she starts up, you know, he wants sex in the kitchen, the arena, the locker room at WrestleMania. I mean, I was cackling, absolutely cackling.
And it was funny, like, Jerry Lawler, I actually didn't mind Jerry Lawler here. I mean, this is the sort of thing that he can do, because you know that secretly, he would probably not secretly, probably openly, he found this highly amusing, because stuff like this funny. I mean, we know that Jerry Lawler's sense of humour is not dissimilar to Vince's in terms of, you know, how infantile it is. So it's like, it was quite funny when Lana's there ranting about it and Rusev was there, like, chuckling. And I mean, I think we've seen a lot worse from WWE, although I've got to question the placement of this in the main event segment. I was looking at the clock and thinking, is this the last thing on the show? Is it going to be something after this? Oh, no, this is it. Lana's accents all over the place.
Oh, she's dipping in and out like a fucking dial-up modem.
I mean, presumably, I don't know whether she's doing this on purpose or she isn't doing this on purpose. I mean, it's just all added to the, you know, overwhelming naffness of it. So, I mean, there was some entertainment value here, you know, deliberate and inadvertent, of course. And then, you know, Lana then told Rusev wants to put it back together, or at least he did before what happened at the end of the segment. He wants Lana back. He still loves her. He's wearing the wedding ring. And then Lana reveals that Lashley had told her that Rusev had cheated on Lana. I mean, would Lashley lie? Would Lashley lie to Lana, Kenny? What do you think?
I don't think that someone who has a history of being in a team with Donald Trump would ever lie.
I mean, have you ever known someone in the wrestling business to tell a fib? I mean, I don't think I have.
I feel the wrestling business is where, you know, if you need to find solace in this depressing world of constant elections and impeachments, then wrestling is your pure haven that you can go to.
It is your moral compass that you can depend upon morning, noon and night. Every day of the week, every day of the year, just like, you know, a number of times that Rusev wanted it with Lana. So, I mean, Lashley comes out and so they have the scrap, Rusev and Lashley, and then Lana turns on Rusev with a kendo stick. Rusev no sells it. Rusev turns round. Lashley hits the low blow. He ends up booting Rusev in the testicles as well. And Rusev's down, and in the end, Lashley and Lana kiss, and that's your show. So, I mean, we've seen worse from WWE, and it was something different. I've got to give WWE credit for that.
But you know what? I mean, this to me is an example of at least they threw something against the wall. Do you know what I mean? Like, even if it's a duff, at least it's something to talk about, to go, you know, do we like it, do we not, whatever. Like, it's you know, this is the shitty soap opera that sometimes we love as wrestling fans. So I actually don't have any real issue with this one, because I'm like, at least, you know, and the fans seem to be behind Rusev here. They seem to, weirdly, this seems to be working in some way. So, I mean, I was listening to Observer Radio today, and they were, Meltzer made a point which I thought was interesting, is that, like, when the rating comes in, which I think will be later today, it'll be, the success of it will be about, did people stay watching in that third hour to see what happened? Or did they not? Because if they didn't, then it's not working. But if people are staying to tune in because they, you could, because they've tried a couple of weird things with the main event before, because it was it 2 years ago or whatever, where Enzo is the Cruiserweight champion, headlined a couple of Raws?
Yes.
So, you know,
because the audience was just falling off a cliff in hour three, wasn't it? So they decided to try something different in hour three.
Yeah, so they've tried this. And, I mean, yeah, Lana's accent going, you know, going in and out, and then, you know, the sex addiction and all that. I mean, this is pure Paul Heyman at his best. It's the most Paul Heyman thing ever.
This is the sort of thing that if he'd done it in ECW, you know, 23 years ago, it would have been an 18 rated segment, and people would have been talking about it very differently, because it would have been really vulgar, and that would have gone over huge with the ECW audience back in the day. But because obviously it's WWE and it's proper mainstream and it's PG rated, it had to be toned down. So I think they went as far as they could, you know, given the limitations of WWE programming.
And you mentioned the crowd. You know, you said the crowd weren't really into it. The crowd were massively into this segment, surprisingly. Like, they were big. They loved Rusev. They were very much on his side about everything. And, you know, if the crowd like it in the arena, then I think you can kind of argue that it's fine. Whereas, I mean, what was the really bad Bayley and Alexa Bliss? Was it This Is Your Life?
Was that the one back in 2017 before Extreme Rules?
Yeah,
I remember that one. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, like, it wasn't like it was that. I mean, because at that point you could see people in the crowd just going, what the hell is this? But this crowd seemed to be into it. So I don't know where you take Rusev has a sex addiction to his push, but I guess that's what we're getting.
Well, Lana is an incredibly attractive woman. I mean, she has been on the TV now for a long time, so people know who she is. And even though her accent is all over the place, she can talk better than many of the male characters in this company. You know, not in the right accent, of course, but she's pretty good on the mic.
She's like Lulu. I mean, like Lulu, some days you get Glasgow, some days you get LA, some days you get London. You just don't know.
Or like Catherine Zeta, she was famous for it as well, wasn't she?
Yeah, as soon as she talks about
American.
As soon as anything Welsh comes up, she just turns into like a mad Welsh woman again, briefly.
I thought Lana was really good there. And obviously, you've got the thing with Rusev, and all the guys are like, you know, and all this. And Jerry Lawler just thinks it's hilarious. And, I mean, they are hamming it up here. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of ham here, and I think it does work to an extent. I don't know. We'll see what happens when Rusev and Lashley go one-on-one. I think there is going to be a lot of interest in it. I mean, you do wonder where it's all going to go, though. I mean, presumably Rusev and Lana, there'll be a big reconciliation. Lana will find out that Lashley was lying to her and that Rusev was always faithful and honest and true. But then again, that game kind of brings us back to where we were when Rusev wasn't even on TV. So I don't know where that really takes him in terms of getting him over as a top guy. It's a shame for Rusev because if you go back to WrestleMania 2018, it really felt like the whole Rusev day was huge and that he could have really broken through as like a, maybe not a top guy, but not far from the top guy. And now it's a different character and it's like he's starting again. Maybe he can work, but it just sort of feels like he was so close and he's having to make that journey again. And I think that's a real shame. And I'm sure you agree with me there, Kenny, because you were a big fan of Rusev 18 months ago.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I'm sick of us talking about, times where they've had characters where the crowd have got really into them and they've dropped the ball with them.
Yeah.
It happened with Kevin Owens earlier on this year. And I think in some ways, and I mean this, I know that there is this kind of thing about, you know, you have to pick a side, right, between like New Japan and WWE and AEW and whatever, right? But I think that whether you're a WWE fan or not, if you are a WWE fan, you should more than anybody want AEW to start kicking their ass a little bit. Because that's the only way that they are going to change what they do. Like, if you go back, look at 1995, when they weren't, you know, getting beat in the ratings, how bad that programming was.
It was.
With, like,
yes.
Mabel and fucking Jean-Pierre Lafitte and all that. It was only when they were getting their ass handed to them by WCW that they finally made change. You know, you wrote about this for years. That's the kind of stuff that needs to happen for us to get the really great stuff. And I wish we just got it. I wish we just got the great stuff and that was it. But that's just not how it works. So I feel like, for me, you know, without that kind of competition, without the AEW stuff, or even, I don't know if New Japan's American thing's going to really be anything, but anything that's an alternative, I'm kind of hopeful that it succeeds, because then hopefully we'll start to see guys like Rusev and see them not drop the ball with them, and then see them actually put them over and you know, because I feel like as a wrestling fan you get your heart broken a lot.
Yes.
And you know, because when you like someone, you can't really like relax and just be like, oh, I can't wait to see them, you know, win the big one, because they might either not win it, or when they do, there'll be some weird schmoz or whatever. So I feel like it would be nice for us to get that trust back again, and I'm hoping that with this Rusev story, it's the beginning of them putting a little bit of trust back in with his character. Does any of that make sense? I feel like I've been rambling.
Yeah, it absolutely does, you know. And but I mean, as wrestling fans, you know, we've got to have faith, haven't we? It's like I'm not a football fan, as you know, and people know. It's like if you're supporting a team that's losing, you know, you've got to have faith in the team. You can't give up on the team, and you know. As fans, you know, we're not going to give up on WWE, and we're going to stick with them, and you know, we're going to point out when they get it wrong, you know, but we want them to get it right. And I'm with you there. If AEW is if their numbers are growing each week, which obviously they haven't done, but if they can reach a point where they're drawing bigger numbers and really getting some momentum and lots more people are talking about them as the hot new promotion, then that is going to have the effect that we are, but you just mentioned, what we're all desirous of on WWE. They will, you know, it will be something that they'll feel like they have to do because they'll want that same level of praise from the fans, and they won't want to be outdone. It is disappointing because they've got such a great talent roster. They've got so many terrific performers who still believe in WWE and want to perform and want to be better than they are and want to do good work. It's not like it's been in the past. You mentioned 1995, where morale was in the toilet, you know, and they didn't have that talent. You go back to 1995, they had so few really good performers. Now WWE has got so many, and the product is, I'm not saying it's, you know, it's been far worse than this, but I think the product could be a lot better with just, you know, a few adjustments here and there. and they've got the talent to really make each episode of Raw and SmackDown sparkle. It's just, you know, the creative isn't there, you know, the booking isn't there, the matchups aren't there, and all the rest of it. And that's what we want from WWE.
Yeah, well, exactly. And two last things we should mention. December the 12th is now the official election date in the UK, if you want to know. The ratings just came in, though, for Raw, so we can actually discuss it. It's the third lowest rated Raw of the year. Ooh. With 2,133,000. The only episodes that were lower than that was the September 9th episode that did 2,130,000, and the 10th of June, which did 2,125,000.
Do we know what the third hour pulled?
Yes. So hour one did 2,326,000, hour two did 2,146,000, and hour three did 1,928,000. So they dropped about 100,000 in that last hour.
Oh dear. Does not bode well for Lana, Rusev and Lashley, does it?
Yes, which is the... Let me see, is there any... I'm trying to see if it's the one of the lowest third hours. I think it's the... Let me have a look here. One, two... Oh no, there's been... Wait, this year it's the... One, two... It's the fourth lowest rated third hour of the year. So...
I mean,
if it's 100,000 at the end, is not terrible compared to what it could be. I mean, some weeks it's like it's a big drop off. So,
But that's because the show didn't start that high.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like,
but there you go.
Really anything to celebrate. Let's be honest.
Jesus Christ. So that's it for us, everybody. We'll be back in a few days. With the overrun. Finn's got a... I don't know if you've said it on air, so I'm not gonna give it away. But there's a great Wrestle Talk article that you're working on right now. Then we'll have the Bret Hart interview up on Patreon. So lots of exciting stuff coming up.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. I'm doing a piece at the moment on Bray Wyatt for Wrestle Talk magazine. I'm not sure if I've mentioned that, but it's going really well. Really enjoying writing that. So
I feel like Thursday may be able to summarize your article. One way or another.
Well, I've already got three potential titles, and I've sort of come up with every. I've sort of worked out. I don't know which way it's going to go, but I'm prepared for almost any eventuality. So I'm going to be all right, whichever way the result goes on Thursday. Don't worry, the article's safe. Maybe.
Maybe. How else can people get in touch with you though, if they want to say hi, buy an ebook, or any of the usual social media type things?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Finlay Martin and Facebook at Finlay Martin, and my website's finlaymartin.co.uk. You can find the links to my books there. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985 or inside_the ropes. You can also get tickets to Kenny Omega in April or Mick Foley in December by going to insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets. Patreon.com/insidetheropes for bonus content with Finn and I. Retro reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews. We'll be talking about Crown. Well, I think me and Robert are going to be doing an original recipe Inside the Ropes, talking Crown Jewel later on this week. So, God help us. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for bonus content as well with interviews. Also, remember, Inside the Ropes will be at Starcast 4 in Baltimore for the Inside the Roads panel with Brandy, Cody and Dustin. So that should be pretty interesting, and looking forward to talking to them and maybe ask a couple of difficult questions.
Tough questions. You need to ask the tough questions, Kenny.
If you think I'm not going to ask Brandy about, you know, being dual heel and babyface and what her thoughts are on it, you got another thing coming. Of course I'm going to ask her. Oh, last thing. I do want to say, I went to the cinema the other day and saw Terminator Dark Fate. It is excellent. If you're a fan of the Terminator movies, just forget the other ones existed after T2. This is the true third film. And if it was a trilogy, this would be a great way to end it.
Oh, fantastic. I've seen the trailer for it, and it does look amazeballs, Kenny, I've got to say. I'm not sure if I'm going to get to the flicks to see it, but hopefully I will, because I think it does look really good.
Yeah, it's well worth it. You know, it's one of those ones where you go in and you kind of you're quite nervous, but it's funny, it's action packed, it's a fresh story, it's a good story, the acting's good. Seeing, you know, I won't give it away, but you know, getting to see Sarah Connor again is just, and the other thing, I if you go and see the movie, you know what I mean, but the opening scene to the movie, and I won't give away what it is, I don't know how they physically made that scene happen.
Wow.
I don't understand. I've no idea. But I hope you guys get a chance to check it out if need be. But we'll be back in a couple of days with more. So, Finn, I hope you enjoy your week, and I'm wishing you all the best luck with the Bray Wyatt article. Wouldn't it be great if he won the title and you could just have that as your photo in there?
It would be great. It would be tremendous. It would be one of those sort of uplifting articles that I basically never wrote in Power Slam. So bleak. No, there were some articles in there that had happy endings, and that would be the perfect ending if Bray were to win the title. But if he doesn't, I'm prepared anyway. So the article's going to be all right. But yeah, we will see. We will all find out. We'll find out for sure on Thursday anyway at Crown Jewel.
We will. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.